You didn't like cutting fruit in half with a samurai sword?
No, I didn't.
See, not everybody likes that, dude.
And then cats like that shit. What's wrong with you?
You're saying you're better than a cat, Chaz?
Yeah, I am better than a cat.
You have heard it here first, folks.
You have no inner cat.
Roll for host.
Roll. Fuck. Charles fails. Oops. Disqualified. Both of you. Don't know how to roll.
15. Hit me back. And.
Total DQ.
Third time's the charm.
Jesus.
What is that? I can't see.
14.
It. 14. All that for.
Wow. 14, 15, 16. Josh, we got a straight.
Sequential.
Welcome to the escort mission. How you doing? I'm Josh.
Hi, Josh.
Who are you?
Hey, Josh.
I'm Charles.
I'm yep. Mike.
Nice.
Nice
and
to see you.
We have gathered on a Saturday.
Podcastery.
Yeah. Or, yeah, unusual day podcastery.
Another it's actually, like, light outside.
Morning podcast?
It is technically morning.
For a
just barely.
For another half an hour.
Yeah. Josh slept in.
I totally
spoiler
did.
Spoiler alert.
Guess what I was doing last night?
Jumping
chicks?
Jacks.
I don't know.
Banging jacks.
Down by the docks? I don't know. Wherever
no,
you go?
No, I was raiding in Final Fantasy 14.
Nice. I knew it. Called it.
Maybe not technically raiding. I was trying
failing
to down,
a raiding?
Trying to down hard mode Titan. It's pretty rad. It's pretty goddamn rad.
He's the earthquakey
yeah.
guy, right?
Yeah. The okay. stone golem type?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Holy shit. I could tell you about this fight.
Oh, how many people do you need involved to make it successful?
8 people. If you use a duty finder, you get 2 tank, 2 healer, but it's really ideally done with 1 tank, 3 healer, maybe, unless you're uber hardcore and then you don't need 3 healers. But we tried with 2. We got pretty far. We learned the mechanics. He just got a bunch of moves. He like, tank phases him away from the group. He like, he summons these bombs, right? In different patterns. So there'll be a bomb that shows up like around the edge of the circle arena, like bomb, 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 bomb around in a mm-hmm, circle, mm-hmm. right? They appear. Mm-hmm. And then the last one appears in the center. And they all have the same timer, right? So the first one appears, the first one to explode.
Mm-hmm.
So if they appear all the way around in a circle and then in the middle,
yeah,
everyone needs to run to the middle and then wait until the outer ones start exploding. And as soon as they explode, you run towards the exploded ones
right.
so that you're in the safe zone
yeah.
when the middle one explodes.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then later the pattern changes and it's like a plus sign. Uh-huh. So there's just a little bit of area safety outside the plus kind of. And then later the pattern changes and it's like 3 rows of bombs. And it's usually like middle, outer, outer.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, sorry. I said that wrong. It's like outer, outer, middle.
Mm-hmm.
Duh.
And then you run towards the middle because they're the last ones to spawn. And then you watch for the outer and whichever one spawned first, the first
you
one to explode,
there.
You run
yeah.
there as soon as it explodes. Right?
Yeah.
There's like several patterns of bombs that you have to like be totally aware of the whole time to like always stand in the safe spot.
And are you doing voice chat while all this happens?
Yeah, usually. Yeah. With as many people as we can. If you know we're missing a full group, then we get random people for the rest.
That would be an interesting idea for a hardcore guild that only raided without voice with just text chat. Like how much harder that would be.
That would be a lot harder.
It's harder. You can,
it probably wouldn't be fun actually.
Well, all these, most of these, you know, group dungeon type things you can do with random people with a random group.
I thought just you were like, going to say most of these things aren't fun.
No, that's
video
not true.
Gaming.
That's not true at all. It's like Call of Duty or whatever. Like you can get matched with random people and then just try it with random people. And sometimes they'll be really, really bad. And sometimes they'll be really, really good. And
sometimes they'll be moderately good. Sometimes they'll be slightly above average.
They kind of run the gamut
yeah,
of things.
You won't know
occur.
What their skill level is.
Well, in Call of Duty, it doesn't take near as much strategy as a FF14 raid boss does it?
At high levels.
Really? There's like multiple strategies
oh, yeah.
that take timing and all that? Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. I don't really play.
I guess it depends.
High level Call of Duty, so.
I mean,
I just think of it as deathmatch, and I suck
most
at it.
No, high level Call of Duty isn't deathmatch.
Is it team deathmatch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Or it's CTF.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like 5-on-5.
So he's got he also
move
like
away from the mic to cough.
He periodically just like punches the ground real hard, which just does damage to everybody. Mm-hmm. And he starts by just doing it like two times, like punch, punch. Mm-hmm. Each one's like 600 or 700 damage or something. But as the fight progresses, he starts going punch, 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 like a lot more punches. Just everyone's taking tons and tons of damage, and you just have to heal through it. It's really hard to heal through. Near the end, he punches like 8 times in a row, which is like twice the amount of health of everyone there. So you just you just have to be healing like really fast, keeping up with it.
Are there no float items or spells? Because that was Final Fantasy had plenty of that.
I don't know what.
Well, like there was like
hovering.
You could float, so that's you wouldn't adorable. Be hit.
It doesn't have that spell.
Oh,
no.
Come on, that's total classic FF.
That would be rad.
Yeah.
No. You can at times you can group together, and the scholar can summon like a damage reduction bubble that you all stand in. Everyone takes 90% damage. It's not that much, but it's of a reduction. But
now, are you playing this boss on like hard mode?
Yeah, this is crazy hard mode.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So, is it way easier on non-hard mode, or is it just slightly harder?
Wait, you can just select level of difficulty?
Well, as you progress into the story, you fight him at like level 30. Spoilers at the end of the story, like he comes back and there's like
what?
A harder version of him.
Evolution
like,
form.
Like post level 50.
It was not his final form.
Mm. Right. This is real common trope in MMOs. There's like regular version things, and then there's what you might call heroic or expert or hard mode versions of things
at
level 50 that are like reusing the content. But instead of just flying through it once, you know, on the first try or whatever, like now it's tuned difficult enough that you have to try like a lot and be real organized to succeed at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I played him. I fought him at 30, and the first time I fought, I didn't know anything about it. I stood at the edge, and I got pushed off the edge of the, and I just fell to my death into like a pool of lava. I was like,
nice.
"Oh, sorry, guys. I guess I'm not supposed to stand there." And then on my second try, I was just like, "Oh, geez, everybody's taking a lot of damage." I was just like spamming heals, and then we beat it. So it wasn't that hard. I got on my second try. You know,
nice.
At the end game, I think we wiped probably a dozen times on our first evening attempt.
Wow.
And we felt really successful because we got pretty far and learned a lot of the mechanics. So I think I could probably down him on my second, like, you know, go, second evening attempting it, second group, if the group's good enough, which is pretty good, you know,
nice
for legitimately difficult raid content. Like lots of times you could beat your head against a specific boss with the same group for days, you know?
Yeah.
So second night, I think should happen. Anyway, he's got a bunch of cool mechanics. He's fun.
Cool.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This might be a short one because we're podcasting.
You have like
actually only about a week after we just recently podcasted. So
yeah, we didn't give ourselves enough time to do much.
To have lots of things occur.
Did anything happen?
Like personally?
Sure. Or news?
Well, we could get into one of our discussions of some of the controversies that have been going around lately.
Yeah, probably the biggest news. Let's why don't we just lead off the show with it is GTA 5.
V.
Yes.
Are V and 5 the same thing? Sorry, that was an actual tweet by someone online.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were okay.
Well, I don't know. It might have been faked. Who knows? It's the internet.
Internet jerks. So it came out and made $1 billion in 3 days.
Freaking holy shit.
That's billion with an M.
So GTA 4, in perspective.
Nobody likes that joke. I think that's really funny. Anyway.
Wait, what was the joke?
Exactly.
Okay.
Billion with an M. I don't know. Because everyone always goes.
Billion with a B.
Man, it's billion with a B. And so I always
followed
like
by
to go,
an I.
It's billion with an M. Just because, whatever. You got to make yourself laugh.
Yeah.
You totally said GTA 4.
GTA 4 made $500 million in, I think, 15 days.
I think that was Call of Duty. The previous record holder was like.
No, I looked at GTA 4 just to compare it. Call of Duty was more than $500 million.
Like 800 million in 15 days or something.
Yes. Yeah. Call of Duty was like 800 in like 15 days. GTA 4 was like $500 million
yeah.
in, you know, the first week or two.
Which
or whatever.
Is chump change. now.
So it like more than doubled the sales in less than half the time than the previous iteration of this specific game. But yeah, that wasn't a record holder. Call of Duty was. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, that is a lot of money. That is the new record holder, not just for games, but for like all media.
Yeah.
Right? All entertainment product sales.
It is.
Well, and each individual unit of entertainment, i.e. the game versus like a movie, is like five times as expensive. So.
Yeah, you don't have to sell as many to hit that record. Yeah. It's like gross sales.
Right. It's nuts, and the Hollywood studios have to be going crazy, because I don't think it doesn't cost as much to create GTA as it does to create Pacific Rim, and it makes way more money much more quickly, and they get all of it as opposed to having to split it with the theater companies. And
I don't know, I heard something about it having like the highest budget of any game ever.
I'm sure it did, but I still don't think that was $200 million, right? Where a big budget movie can easily cost that much.
Games can cost $100 million.
Can they?
Yeah, that's still 50% of like what a...
I don't know what it costs.
It's getting up there, but it's still lower.
We should be informed and prepared.
Nah. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Nah. Good joke. You with the funny. You having a laugh?
Let's speculate.
Yeah.
But the biggest... So the issue with this game...
It made $5 trillion in half a second.
The game's selling incredibly well. It's, you know, by all accounts, really good-ish. Like, as far as I know, it's good. I watched like a little bit of a Let's Play on, or no, I watched a stream. I watched a live stream. There's a bunch of live streams, people on Twitch streaming the whole thing. And I watched a mission that, not really knowing much about it, I think is probably like a third of the way through the game. I watched like one of these big heist missions, which apparently are the new thing, the thing that's new for this game that wasn't in other ones is these kind
committing
of
crimes.
No, specific heists, like, we're going to go pull a job, and I'm going to have, like, a number of different choices of how I can approach it, and I can do, like, a, you know, Mission Impossible sneaky style, or I can just go in guns blazing, and to do the sneaky one, I have to do all this extra preparation, and, like, there's kind of some branching path stuff that goes along with it, as opposed to just, like, yo, man, just go shoot up the place and get the stuff and come back, you know.
Right. A little more developed.
Yeah, and I guess you can like level up the hench people who come along with you.
You golf.
Right. Yeah, but like, so if you have a driver that you've been leveling up and is really good, then later on you might have a heist that requires two drivers, and all of a sudden you don't have a good driver to do the second part of the driving, and that guy may fuck up because he's not as good as your main guy, whatever.
Totally. Yeah, you go to the shooting range to increase your gun skill. You like you golf and you play yoga, you do yoga, and you do like random shit like that to increase your dexterity or your strength or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you just do all these weird mini games to power up all your dudes.
That being said, the game's, you know, pretty good. It's also apparently pretty vile in many other ways.
It seems really cynical. Like, I mean, they built this like Disneyland type of like world with a lot of things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's
golf and yoga.
It
darts.
The internet.
You know, the city is so big. Oh yeah, there's built an internet.
Yeah.
In-game internet.
With tons of parody sites and stuff. Yeah.
But the city's so big that it's almost like LA combined with Yosemite combined.
Yeah, it's like LA plus Riverside County plus maybe a little bit of Merced or something like that.
Like, it sounds big and cool, and it's like, oh, I want to go there and just have fun and not necessarily be a criminal. But it's really, really cynical, pretty like pervasively.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the calling cards the calling card of this series, right? GTA is always about committing lots of crime, no particular reason why, and a very cynical kind of takedown, you know, maybe satirical takedown of America as we are in the present moment. You know, it's all the, you know, it's like we get to be a little dirty because this is a video game and we have an M rating, and so we're just gonna, you know, make slightly puerile jokes about everything that's shitty about America.
you know, fast food and obesity and, you know, Maxim magazine and just like everything that's shitty about what it is to live in the U.S.
And that's kind of what they've always been doing.
That
right?
is what
that's,
they hang
that's their
MO.
On. Yeah. And it's weird that they're, I mean, there's been controversy about this game since it began. I don't think this one is the first one to ever be leveled any criticism against. Like obviously they make really good games, very huge games, very involved games, very complex games with lots of working systems. They keep getting better and better, but the tone of the game is always kind of dark and cynical and vile, and it's, you know, it's not a happy place. You're not playing happy characters that are doing happy things. You're playing, you know, it's sort of the Breaking Bad, you know, like anti-hero
it's
thing.
Like,
I mean,
it's
called Grand Theft Auto, for God's
sake,
like, you know?
It's like Breaking Badland. It's like, it's not Disneyland, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I want to play there.
But I don't think you're even an anti-hero. Like, that was one of the many articles that I read about it said that there's no anti-hero aspects to this. You don't really have a reason why you're sort of being forced down a dark road the way Walter White does in Breaking Bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you're a shitty person.
These like, characters supposedly have less motivation than ever to commit crimes.
Yeah.
Like, they just want money.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, I don't know, Nico Bellic's story is supposed to be more like he was forced into this by circumstance.
Yeah, they keep pulling me back in, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So does that mean that this game series is now regressing in terms of its... I don't know how to phrase it, but something bad is happening and they're going in the wrong direction.
I kind of hoped its storytelling would evolve a bit more. I mean, maybe it has in structure, like it's three characters and
yeah,
so it seems a little bit more interesting and complex that way. But yeah, in tone, it seems like it's like late 90s tone.
It feels like it's like they're making the same observations about culture, and they're just relying on saying the same things that they've always said, you know, right.
It feels like it exists in the year that it was
conceptualized, right? Yeah.
Right. Like 8 years ago.
But I think that they kind of have said this about video games, and they have said this about America before many times, and it's like they're not progressing. I think it's a good point that they do tell a story well. They are really, really, you know, masters of the genre of the medium.
Yeah.
They're really good at telling a story through a video game, right? I think they're excellent at that, actually. And they are good at telling stories that don't involve this sort of ultra cynical view of society. They have done it in other games. I think L.A. Noire isn't ultra cynical. It has some actually relatively, you know, heroic people in it. John Marston in Red Dead Redemption is a very full realized character who does have a lot of really good motivations for the kind of bad things that he's forced to do. But I don't know. So the other kind of controversial aspect is the game's treatment of women. There, maybe we should have seen it coming, but basically the game is pretty actively misogynistic and does not have any sort of well-realized female characters. I don't know. What's the name of the test?
The Bechdel test.
I don't know if anybody's run the Bechdel test against this.
Yeah, and just for people who don't know,
it sounds like it would fail miserably.
Yeah, it's not so much scientific as just kind of a good rule of thumb where it's a very low bar that much media still fails, and that's the significance of it. That mm-hmm. if a
piece of art,
has two or even has more than one female in it. That I think is named and talks with each other about something besides
a boy, a man.
Yeah. Like
if two women who have names have a conversation about right. something other than a man, then you pass the test.
And you'd think that would be really easy to pass, and yet lots of media fails.
Yeah, the Polygon review, which otherwise was pretty glowing,
mm-hmm.
You know, listed basically all the female characters and you know, some of them didn't have names, and most of them were
described as shrill harpies,
or airheads,
and they basically weren't characters. Basically, every character in the whole game is male, which is like the leads that you play. Mm-hmm. We know there were three men, that you jump between, and that was announced a long time ago. But in a game that you're gonna play for like 50 hours mm-hmm. easily, or maybe even if you blow through the campaign, it's probably 30.
Right.
Like the story just has so much content and length.
Yeah.
It's just hard to believe. You know, these games have like over 100 characters.
Mm-hmm.
They probably have more than 50 named characters easily.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's fully just voice hard to acted. Believe.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. How do you write that much content?
It seems like you have to be trying at that point.
Any female character.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be totally just trying to exclude women.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it was interesting though that I did read this article after we had the chat about the Polygon review, which just for the record was odd in that they devoted the last couple paragraphs of their review. In general, the review was pretty positive, saying this is an amazing game, and then the last few paragraphs were about not only women being, you know, horrible, you know, basically props and not real people, but also there was like a scene where you have to like go from torturing one racial minority to another one, and they're also kind of props.
Yeah, there's mini games where you waterboard and then where you like you know, you're basically
Jack Bauering your way.
You're racial profiling a lot.
Yeah.
You're like, that guy meets the profile, you know, and it seems really racist too, and the torture thing seemed really like unpleasant. And the reviewer described it as
nauseating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like he described it in really harsh terms, and he went off about the women and the torture and the racism like for a couple paragraphs.
Yeah,
and then immediately shifts to the game's phenomenal 9.5.
Right,
and it just seemed like such a divergent like attitude. I didn't know how that.
Yeah, in particular because I think we discussed when Polygon first launched, their whole review system is based on one person writing a review without considering score, playing the game and writing the review, and then a panel of three other editors reading that review and then coming up with a score that fits it, rather than starting from the point of a score and, you know, kind of writing a review to justify it. So it should avoid those things, and it seemed in this case that it was pretty divergent. Like, it'd be hard to read particularly those paragraphs and then decide that, you know, all of these things, if you're literally describing something as making you feel nauseous, then is probably worth more than a half point deduction from perfect.
Yeah, and the only defense I have for that score that I can think of is that, which gets into the question of what is the score representing?
Mm-hmm.
Is the score representing the quality of the game, not only in its role as a game, but also its role as like a cultural artifact,
uh-huh.
and how it affects societal norms and mores and stuff. And I feel like, you know, those scores are still like, should I play this game?
Yeah.
Is this game, do I recommend playing this game because it is worth playing? And that's what that 9.5 represents. It's not, does this game, you know, set the women's movement back 50 years,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I'm not saying, I don't know how I feel whether it should be one or the other. I mean, I think as games become, you know, well, they're already mainstream. And I think that only reviewing a game in terms of how awesome it is as a game outside of its context in society is, you know, was fine for Space Invaders and fine for Super Mario Brothers, which if you want to review Super Mario Brothers using a, you know, misogynistic cultural context, you know, there's like one female character. Actually, I think Toad was also a female. But there's the princess who's totally helpless, and all she does is wait for Mario to come and save her. So she's pretty one dimensional. But no one ever thought to levy any criticism against that game for its horrible portrayal of women in a video game. Obviously, GTA 5 is a long way complexity wise from Super Mario Brothers. So it is, you know, I feel like it's as powerful as a good book or a movie or a TV show in shaping how people think about the world. You know, kids play these games and they're going to see these storylines and they're going to, you know, note the lack of strong female characters and then be like, well, I guess this is what I perhaps have to aspire to, you know, or not. I don't know. But I think the point is that that score was not taking that into account. It was literally saying, I really recommend you play this game because it is amazing.
If
it also sucks in this area, but
if the review were binary, should you play it? It would be an Ebert thumb. It wouldn't be a 1 to 10 with half points.
Right.
You know? And you know, there's nuance between an 8 and a 9.5. And it just seemed really, really surprising to me that they would describe it as nauseating and,
significantly negative terms,
significant criticisms
series, yeah.
That seem to be completely dismissed. Like, actually, none of these concerns were relevant. You know, it's a virtually flawless game. You know, it just seemed really weird to me, and yeah. I kind of had a problem with Polygon's review. Anyway, like you said, it still seems fun. Like, I kind of want to pick it up just to like drive the boats. There are, you know, mm-hmm. the jet skis,
yep.
and
yeah.
do yoga and play golf.
Yeah.
I don't think I would probably play through the whole campaign. Although I heard spoilers that like all the three main characters are portrayed in a pretty interesting light at the end of the story
mm-hmm.
that kind of puts it in a little different perspective. But I don't expect that to be all redeeming.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the creator there, I don't recall the guy's name, but the creative director for the game punched the guitar
official
did an interview where he sort of gave some relatively reasonable reasons for there not being a female protagonist, basically to do with, you know, the story that they wanted to tell being about masculinity in this, you know, modern era. So I thought that it was, I think they are trying to say something. They're trying to make some points. It just feels like the point that they're trying to make, and, I haven't played the whole thing. I don't know how it ends up. Feels like the point they're trying to make is a little stale at this point.
That sounds,
and they've made it before.
That's really interesting because, you know, you feel like their defense of male characters is valid. And I felt like maybe the defense of the three main playable characters being all male is excusable or necessary for the story.
Yeah.
But the fact that the whole game has basically
no that I think is definitely
like their response silly. To that, I thought was hilariously like ambivalent. Mm-hmm. It was essentially quote oops.
Yeah, like, it was basically like, oh, I guess I thought like, we should have thought of this.
Yeah, the question to them seriously. The question to the devs posted was like, do you guys think you gave enough thought to the female characters in your game? And the response was basically like, I guess not.
Guess not, yeah. yeah.
Like, we never thought about it at all yeah. because we are 100% male company. Like,
it reminds me.
Do they seriously not have any women in their
well,
company?
Well, this
that
is
seems
just
impossible.
This is just my, like, uninformed guess.
Yeah, yeah.
That because like the only way this could possibly happen is if they had literally no female input
or just very few.
On the entire yeah. development
yeah.
team.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like you'd think if there was even one woman working on building the game or story at all anywhere in the process, they might have said, "Can we like put this character there?"
Right.
It must have been 100% male writer team, I think.
This is a problem in tech in general, yeah. right? You know, that just completely dominated by men. It's like 97% men.
They just don't think about the issue.
Yeah.
They grew up
there's
watching Die Hard and stuff. And
yeah.
playing
all
GTA 1.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be freaking sweet as hell to see what a predominantly female rock star would come up with for mm-hmm. a GTA 6. Just, you know, like...
Or not even predominantly female.
Well,
just like,
whatever. I mean,
think L.A. Yeah. Noire did a lot better job. But L.A. Noire, they bought the studio that was developing it when it was two-thirds done, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't the same team of people.
Yeah.
There is a whole kind of tech bro character that's developing. It's like... The Reddit guys, the
brogrammer, kind of, right?
Yeah, the brogrammer,
that's a term.
The
yeah.
tech bro, right? There's this kind of, it's like, you take any situation that's predominantly anything, really. I mean, but, you know, we sort of think of bros as, you know, frat guys or, you know, sports jocks. And guys are just as likely to develop these kind of same sort of prejudices and, you know, kind of annoying aspects of their personalities if they're, you know, socialized in one predominantly male group, whether it has to do with if it's organized around programming or organized around football, you know?
That actually reminds me of something I linked in our chat earlier about this guy who wrote a story recently that... it was the guy who went to a park and brought a typewriter and started making up stories on the spot for people who would, like, you know, flip him a couple dollars or something. But a picture of him was taken and put on Reddit with that his little sign cropped out. So it was just a skinny guy with, you know, glasses and a old typewriter sitting on a bench in the park. And, became a meme.
Like, no laces in his shoes.
Yeah. It was shorts.
He became the fucking hipster meme.
Yeah, it was every hipster-hating, like, person's wet dream to have that picture to make fun of. And then, you know, as soon as he, like, responded to a thread, like, the culture, like, immediately kind of, like, did a 180 and started, like, being nicer, whereas initially they were just mean with that. You know, it was like the greater internet dickwad theory in practice.
That was my favorite part of the story, is that they were all, like, really mean until the moment that he appeared.
And he became a real person.
It just put everything in perspective. It was like, oh, this is a person, not an object.
Right.
So there's another Reddit story of almost exactly the same thing, where a guy took a picture of a Sikh woman. And so one of the aspects of that religion is that they don't alter their physical appearance, right? So these are the men traditionally wear turbans, often mistaken for Muslims, but they're not. It's like a different, it's like an offshoot of Hindi something, I think. And there was a Reddit guy who took a photo of someone, like, two places in front of him in line, like in a cafeteria at college or something. And you know, this woman was relatively overweight and actually had, like, some stubble, growth of stubble on her, like, had some facial hair, right? And wrote, you know, some typically Reddity thing, like, I don't even fucking know what I'm looking at right now. Mm-hmm. And it turned into the whole thing completely disparaging this woman, who found out about it, wrote, like, one paragraph about, like, oh, you know, I'm Sikh. This is the kind of context for why I don't alter my physical appearance. You know, it's part of my religion. We don't do it. And instantly it changed. And a lot of people, and actually one of the nice things about that thread was that people immediately rushed to her defense. They're like, oh, you guys are assholes. And then somebody intelligently started going through the thread and doing compare and contrast of individual Redditors and saying, like, oh, like, you know, yesterday you wrote this, but today you wrote this, and just, like, showing, like, no, you were being a dick just like everybody else. And now all of a sudden you're, you know, taking people to task for it.
Mob mentality is strong in, like, any culture. And it's totally ironic that the people that we kind of think are on Reddit or would frequent Reddit and comment a lot are usually the same people who were marginalized and bullied in school for being different or overweight or ugly or into, you know, nerdy stuff. And yet they come on a forum like Reddit and they immediately turn in to the people that bully them, just because that, you know, like you want to be a part of something. You found a tribe that is like-minded, and you will do whatever it takes to become a part of that tribe so you feel like you belong, even if it means tearing apart an anonymous person in a picture on an internet forum. Like, it's just weird how that happens. And sometimes I think it's kind of unconscious, because your urge to be a part of something totally overrides the nice guy default you might have had otherwise, which is alarming that people do that. And then immediately that person becomes a real person. They're like, oh shit, this isn't just an internet forum. This is like, I'm in a room with another person and I'm basically saying, you suck.
Right.
Oh, wait, yes. I wouldn't do that. What the fuck am I thinking? Yeah. You know, it's amazing how we can have like these two personalities and that it could happen to us if we're not careful, if we don't check ourselves.
It makes me worried about ever being in a hiring position. Like, I occasionally sit in on interviews and assist with them, but I never have like the actual hiring decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But if I am ever in that position, I would probably request that HR give me resumes with the names blacked out or something like that, because that shit happens all the time. Like, that's that study, you see it pop up every year. Like, you know, they did a study, and if you, in symphony orchestras, if you have the person audition behind a curtain, then women are hired, like, drastically more often than they are otherwise. And
oh, my favorite part on that topic,
yeah,
was a recent competition of classical musicians. I don't remember if it was violinists or something,
mm-hmm.
where they played the audio recordings mm-hmm. to music professionals or whatever, and said, try to guess which one of these two won the competition.
Yeah.
And they had like no accuracy at all. It was 0% accuracy. It was like 50-50, right?
Yeah.
But when you watch the muted video of them performing,
yeah,
it was, you know, highly correlated with guessing which one won the competition. So it was like really more of a visual performance than auditory. It was equivalent auditorily.
But the interesting part about that was they were actually pretty good at guessing when they saw the muted video who won the competition. But that isn't the same as who was better. Right? That was who was likely to win.
Right.
Yeah. And so the judging, even when they were hearing, it was an indictment of the judging.
Right. Right?
Yeah. Fascinating.
We're a funny species.
Yeah.
There, summed it up.
Just to go back to GTA for a second and, you know, give the opposite perspective, we had a friend that essentially defended the game's right to have, like, no important female leads or something, potentially. And I'm sure that's common opinion. The way I think of that is like, well, if you took an average dozen like fantasy football league group of bro dudes and put them in a room and told them to create content, you know, they might make something like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And does that thing have a right to exist? Sure, that's fine. Like, it's meant for that audience, you mm-hmm. know? Like, should Spike TV, like, have its programming
spot on the dial?
You know? Like, okay, fine. But we can still criticize that as just not our favorite media.
Right.
Right. It's still, you know, like, worthy of criticism for it.
I'm just disappointed that it didn't have more perspective
mm-hmm.
and isn't a better story.
Yeah.
Because I feel that's kind of a juvenile story. I feel like it's a group of 15-year-old dudes kind of made that game.
Right.
And so this goes back to our older discussion about how, like, most game developers, or, you know, on average, more game developers are young, single, white males.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as they have children or get married or whatever, the hours are too much for them and they change industries
mm-hmm.
on average. And women, I think, are kind of, like, encouraged or pushed out of the industry, like we've talked about before, pushed out of development careers, mm-hmm. You know, on average, because just less accepted in high school classrooms.
Right.
You know, the very first experience of programming is not often a pleasant one,
mm-hmm.
and they just find other careers.
I saw something interesting about, I think this was something that Google did. They changed the way they post job descriptions. What they found was, you know, Google A-B tests everything. They mm-hmm. they famously A-B tested like 30 different shades of blue for the links on, mm-hmm. you know, like which one gets the best click-through and whatever. So they A-B tested their hiring practices, and they noticed that when they posted a job as a bullet list, just a list of, you know, 8 bullets of job duties,
mm-hmm.
They would get significantly fewer female applicants than if they posted the job as a paragraph description.
That's so fucking weird.
That is
very interesting, right?
Wow.
Because
I like bullets better than paragraphs.
The thought was that women would read a bullet list and, you know, say there are 8, and they would say like, oh, you know,
six numbers 4 and 7 I'm not very strong on, so I probably wouldn't get this job and I'm not going to apply. Whereas men would be much more willing to say, like, numbers 4 and 7 I'm not very strong on, but I can probably pick those up and would still apply. Right? Like, I can pick up on the rest of that shit. But when they posted a description with essentially the same content but written out as a paragraph rather than as a sort of listing of the things that you need to apply, they brought it much closer to the kind of 50-50 rates that they were, you know,
fascinating,
theoretically should be getting. Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm curious, yeah, what goes through their head.
I think basically on average men are cockier.
Well, yeah.
Right. So they're just more confident they you know would be qualified where they aren't.
Right. Right.
And yeah, would be more likely to really realistically assess,
right,
if they're underqualified and not like over gloat or whatever the right word is.
So you mentioned, God, now that you've said that, all I can think about that and not what Josh you said right before he said that. Oh, the role that GTA plays, and you were disappointed, mm-hmm, and it felt, mm-hmm, like a bunch of 15-year-olds. Well, I feel like that leads into the other major topic that still is brewing,
sure,
which is the Penny Arcade and PAX Dick Wolves plus other stuff controversy. Because I think one of the things about that controversy that's still kind of brewing, the most recent thing that happened that I read that kind of made me reevaluate that thing, because it's been going on for years now. I mean, the original comic, I think, is like 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Was Rock Paper Shotgun, a blog from the UK, which I actually really like reading. It's one of the few blogs that I don't know, I still feel like, I don't know, it feels authentic. It's like the best thing I can think of, mm-hmm, that something like a Kotaku or a Joystick feels more, I don't know, more like an IGN, like industry news, rather than a bunch of game lovers talking about stuff they like. Anyway, that's just my subjective feeling.
I would call that editorial voice.
Yeah, yeah, it feels more like an editorial voice and less like a news review. But they recently, on an article, put at the top that they are going to boycott any news, or that they're going to boycott any journalism about any news that comes out of PAX.
They're not going to cover PAX.
They're not going to cover PAX, or I'm not really sure details whether any news that comes out of PAX, that they will just remove the part where they learned about it at PAX, or if they're literally not going to talk about anything that is learned from PAX. I don't know. But because they disagree with the general attitudes and philosophy of the people who run PAX, which the two main people at the top, who you know, are the guys who, you know, started Penny Arcade, Mike Krahulik and Jerry Holkins. So they made a comic like 3 years ago about, you know, it was a trope in MMOs where you go on a quest and you have to save or do an X number of things. And in this case, it was save 5 slaves from a cave. So the player character does that. The 6th one comes up, presumably, and says, oh, help me, every night, you know, I'm raped to sleep by dick wolves. Please don't run away, hero, save me. And the hero's like, no, dude, I already got 5. I'm good. Like, don't make this weird.
Right.
You know? And that kind of started, I mean, obviously it was not a joke about rape. It was a joke about an MMO trope, you know, that, oh, I've saved 5, I can't save anymore. The game mechanic doesn't actually let me save another slave, so I have to leave you behind to be raped by dick wolves.
Right.
But some people took issue with a rape joke, which, you know, for a lot of people who have, you know, had sexual abuse, that's a trigger. And, you know, they apparently also read Penny Arcade, which to me seems like a weird overlap in parts, because like they have no filter and they will joke about anything, and they've had other rape jokes in the past in their comics. That was not the first time they'd made one.
They have a character called the Fruit Fucker, who they call, right, a literal rapist as, yeah, one of their main characters.
Yeah, so it's,
which is a juicing machine.
Yeah, it seems very odd that particular comic would cause so much ire based on their pedigree. But that is not why the flame is still burning 3 years later. It was because people did come and say, hey, I'm offended by this, I wish you hadn't made this comic, or something like that. And Mike, who unfortunately does not have any filter to his fans, let alone the comic, kind of dismissed them and said, you know, I don't care. We think it's funny. you know, not even probably a simple I'm sorry. He just was unapologetic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people took even more ire with that. And then they ended up making like merchandise that had, you know, like a kind of faux sports college sports team with a wolf at the top that said Dick Wolves on it. And they sold that in their store, which...
And then stopped selling it very quickly.
Right. After, like, yeah, they finally basically had some common sense about it.
There was a whole series of of kind of poor decision making and poor public relations after that happened that has clearly extended a lot longer and farther than any of them thought that it would. I'm interested that you say that you're surprised that people would... like, I don't think it's particularly relevant whether people would or wouldn't read a piece of media, whether it's okay for them to be, like, quote, in quotes, okay for them to be offended by it. Like, I think that people can definitely be, you can't assume that just because my traditional audience doesn't include lots of black people that it's okay for me to make racist jokes because, well, you shouldn't come to me anyway. I'm a racist guy, so you should, you know, like, I don't think that's a particularly relevant
it was not argument. It was not my main point, but I'm just trying to
understand. I think that people kind of make that argument. Like, look, it's not for you, so you shouldn't be able to have an opinion about
it. No. Yeah. That's definitely not the point I'm making. I'm more surprised that someone who had ostensibly been reading Penny Arcade for a while. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's where I'm wrong. Maybe the people who were up in arms over that comic were not regular readers. Mm-hmm. And so they were not used to the atmosphere. You know, it would be sort of like going and, you know, seeing Louis C.K. for the first time. If you had no idea what that guy was about and you didn't really watch stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. he could be pretty surprising because he is pretty unfiltered and... You know, so maybe those are the people who saw the comic and were like, oh my God, I can't believe someone made a comic about this. I'm offended. Whereas people, I mean, I've been reading Penny Arcade since the beginning, so maybe that's why that kind of joke didn't even register with me, because that's kind of their level of filter. That was my only point. I'm surprised that they were surprised they would make that joke.
Well, they are, you know, complex, interesting creators, right? They founded a charity. They founded a series of large conventions. They make graphic novel type content like Daughters of the Ironwood and what's the Boy Scout one? Something Scouts. Wood Scouts.
And they've made multiple video games.
You know, they made video games. They
do a podcast.
You know, they have a bunch of comics that are totally appropriate and funny.
Right.
But then every once in a while they have really like vulgar comics.
Yeah.
You know? So I mean, it just depends how much content you have to see of theirs before you call yourself a fan or a follower or reader.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a ton of people that, you know, first experience anybody like Louis C.K. or whatever with a rated G set.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, I'm a Louis C.K. fan because I haven't heard his rated X stuff yet or whatever, you know?
You watch Full House and think you know what Bob Saget is all about.
I'm a big Bob Saget fan.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised by that at all. That some people would be offended. It'd be the first time that they're offended. There's always a first time for anything, you know. But yeah, they certainly handled the follow up pretty badly. You know, they made fun of their criticizers the next day on their next comic or 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comic was actually funny too, but it was a little rude and heavy-handed. You know, it seems like if they want to ignore the criticism, they should ignore the criticism and stop doing these things like the
deliberately
making fun of
provocative
those
stuff. Yeah.
And the shirt to me seems pretty directly provocative.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, it out of all that context, like. It could be seen as making fun of a sports team, you know, but they have other shirts like that. I think,
I think what you need to consider when you're making that shirt is who's going to buy this shirt.
Yeah.
Like, and is that person who does have all the context and knows exactly what it represents really the kind of person that we want as fans,
right?
Like the guy who buys that shirt, that's a fucked up guy. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm in favor of more rape jokes in culture. Like, you know, I think that there's one line, which is, I'm a creator. I should be allowed to make jokes. The point of a joke is part of the point of a joke is to push boundaries and to, you know, use humor to kind of rigorously and really push boundaries of culture and find out where the lines are so that in a non-humor context, we know where they are, right? Lots of examples of that. Richard Pryor and George Carlin and Lenny Bruce, right? So yeah, there's that side of things. Should be able to make the joke, but the kind of like, yes, I actively want to see more of that happening. That's a little, that kind of dude.
I mean, there's a whole company devoted to making shirts like that called T-Shirt Hell.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Every single one of their, they have levels of boundary pushing. You know, they have the ones that are like, oh, that's a little obscene. And then they have literally the, you know, I would rather be, you know, fucking dead babies shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there are people that buy those shirts.
Right.
And those are, I guess, the same people that buy Dick Wolf shirts. And I mean, I'm not sure if I don't know if I would be like 100% in agreement with you that like that a person that would buy one of those shirts is now like, you know, not worthy of existing or their opinion is now completely invalid because
I think he
that means that they support the concept that is on the shirt.
I think he meant more on average. If you think about,
I guess, I don't know.
You know, the total of people that would buy that shirt.
Maybe someone who owns all the T-shirt Hell
like,
shirts.
People like me would be uncomfortable wearing that
yeah.
shirt, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the vast majority of so the thing that's weird about it is that they do, like, PAX, one of the things about PAX is that the whole ethos is it's supposed to be super inclusive and, you know, a place where everyone can come and kind of let their freak flag fly and geek out and do Nintendo Street Pass and play yeah. Hacky Sack and like it's supposed to be this
yeah
this...
in some ways they're more inclusive than every other gaming expo
yeah.
Like they have a ban on booth babes and right. stuff like that
yeah
you know but the way Mike has followed it up with a couple other things is you know very recently it became controversial again because he was asked if he had any regrets and he said he regretted pulling the Dick Wolf t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I guess he didn't give enough context for that. Later he apologized and said he regretted everything he did following up that original comic.
Yeah.
He said he regretted doing that follow-up comic making fun of people and he regretted
releasing the t-shirt, pulling the t-shirt.
Yeah.
He basically said that all of our actions since the original strip have been tone deaf and yeah. I'm sorry about all of it.
Yeah, he mentioned like way before, I think, yeah, like shortly after the Dick Wolf thing came out, but way before all the fallout, that he's definitely a vindictive person when he feels attacked. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think he was feeling attacked for people saying, hey, I don't like what you're doing.
Right.
Totally.
And it wasn't about like, I'm a victim of sexual abuse and what you're doing is causing me emotional pain. It was more like, I don't like what you're doing.
Right.
And he's like, well, fuck you. I can do what
I want.
Well,
yes. In context, you know? In his defense, immediately after that first comic, he started receiving tweets along the lines of, what does it feel like to perpetuate rape culture?
Right.
Or, you know, like...
And he said, yeah, oh, it feels fine.
Yeah.
You know.
And so then he permanently became a quotable
yeah.
rape defender or something. I don't yeah. know. Yeah, I think he received threats to his family, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, he received a bunch of negative feedback immediately on Twitter. So he got super defensive. And so in his defense, like, that's why he lashed back out at everyone afterwards. But... Yeah, it's another one of those crazy stories where when you receive criticism on Twitter or on the internet, you're going to receive the most extreme criticism, and
right.
you're going to have to respond 100% more professionally than that.
Yeah.
You can't respond in kind because you are in a position of power and responsibility, you know? And it's hard for the... It's as someone who just listened to, like, a billion hours of them talking,
yeah,
and as, you know, essentially fans of theirs, like... I do admit that those guys don't have nearly enough perspective on admitting how much power and responsibility they have. Every right. time they're asked at a Q&A, like, what does it feel like to be in this position of power or responsibility? Or, you know, essentially, that's the question, because people are asking, like,
yeah.
what's it like to be movie, you know, stars or whatever? They, you know, 100% respond as humbly as possible, like,
we're not,
we
stars.
Just feel like dudes yeah. that make yeah. shit, you know, dirty jokes in
we're
our,
in the JPEG business
in our garage yeah. still. That's what we feel like. And yeah. they 100% still respond like that. They have taken,
professional athletes do this all the time. They're like, I'm not a role model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and nobody movie stars and music stars.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, and, but when they're forced into it, you know, they, yeah. they have to have this perspective of realizing that they, you know, started this charity. They started this big mm-hmm. inclusive convention. Like, they have tried to distance themselves from both those things
right.
a little bit. Actually, more the charity than the convention.
Yeah.
They haven't distanced themselves from the convention. They still act like figureheads at the convention, I think.
Well, and they still go to it every time. They don't even have yeah. to go to their own convention.
You know, I think they need more perspective mm-hmm. on their responsibility. They need to be more mature in response.
Acknowledge they've admitted that it. The responsibility exists.
They've
yeah.
admitted that a little bit. Like Mike has said, I don't belong on Twitter. And he's quit Twitter like multiple times.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, he's an addict, man. That's an addict. Yeah. Well, and the reason why I had segued into it was because I feel like their role is sort of similar to like Rockstar, because they make the $1 billion selling in 3 days mm-hmm. game now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure if you ask them, they'd probably say, no, we're not role models. We're not making a video game that is bettering humanity. We're just making a fun video game.
Yeah. On the other hand, they are the most influential yeah. media ever.
Yeah. They can't, I mean, and like you said, just with the Penny Arcade guys, like, they can continue to say humble and say, no, that we're not role models. Don't listen to what we do. We're just in the JPEG business.
Right.
And they can keep living that way, but there will be consequences,
yeah.
and they can choose to ignore them, like Mike essentially violently did, and there will be repercussions. And, I mean, maybe this whole thing is finally teaching him a little perspective, but maybe not. Maybe they'll keep being...
I actually do think that you can see, you can follow a progression, because they started this webcomic when they were very young, right? They started yeah. it, like, in high school or immediately afterward.
And they nearly lost it all to a bad business deal, too.
They definitely seem to have matured over the course of time. And, you know, even over the course of the past 3 years, their opinions on this have shifted quite a bit. The kind of transgender controversy that happened, without going into all the details about that, Google it. You know, I think that they're kind of wrap up another one of these long apology emails or blog posts about it. Basically also was a similar, like, I really learned a lot. I didn't understand, you know, all the context into which I was injecting my opinion. And now knowing it, I think, you know, my opinion has changed. Right. So I think that you can kind of sort of track a trajectory of their maturity as they become adults, as they have kids, get married and all that stuff. To kind of move on to another thing which sort of has to do with this. I linked you guys, there's a Boing Boing article about Hot 97, the kind of seminal hip-hop station in New York City, and an incredibly fascinating interview that just happened there. So there's a DJ on Hot 97 called Mr. C, who was videotaped like picking up a transvestite hooker in New York City. And the video blew up on sort of hip hop forums and on the boards. And there had been sort of like some controversy surrounding this before, and you know, a couple like images, and he'd always like vehemently denied it, said people were out to get him. And recently when the video came out, he resigned from his job, and but has since, like 2 days later, took his job back, in large part because of this interview that he did, like, which was going to be his last time on air. So he was interviewed by the kind of managing director of the station, who's called Ebro Darden. It's just really amazing. I highly recommend everyone go listen to it. It's just a half hour of discussion between two men about, you know, this kind of sexual proclivity that the guy has, the, you know, whether he considers himself to be gay or straight, just sort of the way that he exists in the world and how tired he is of having to pretend that he's something he isn't, because the cultural milieu in which he exists, hip hop, is so extremely homophobic and like just violently intolerant of a lot of things. And I think that's really true. It's one of the only cultural institutions I think it's a dominant cultural force, and B, one of the only places where you can still basically have completely homophobic views, relatively racist views that are sort of generally accepted and like, oh, it's just a rap song. That's what it's about. You know, bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks, right? Very recently, Macklemore made, you know, huge news by putting out a song that was directly pro gay marriage, right? And it was a gigantic thing, a huge story, and you know, and there have been many that raised its own issues, because like there have been other black sort of quote conscious rappers who have done similar things, but because it was a white guy, it made news. That's its own issue,
which he even admitted to.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. Anyway, this is very fascinating because the Mr. Darden, Ebro Darden, the station's managing director, basically just asked him to stay. He's like, people who think that, I don't care if people think that. I don't care if people in the hip-hop community think that. That's something that we need to re-examine as a community. We want you to stay on the air. Like, we don't care what you do in the bedroom. It's just amazing. It's like a half an hour of listening to society get better. It's great. It's really definitely worth a listen.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. Any other news? Got other news to talk about? People are lining up for iPhones.
Yeah, iOS 7 is out. I mean,
I don't know why people line up at this point. Like, you're gonna get your iPhone.
Dude, people have been lining up for that phone like for weeks. I think I read an article about some guy waiting like a week ago for it or something.
But like seven iPhones in, you still are lining up.
I mean, I don't know. I don't really understand. No, it's not that I don't understand, but I definitely do not share the desire of the must have it first crowd. But that's hugely predominant in technology. Technology is full of like, I want to be the first to have this technology. I want to play with it first,
I guess.
And I don't care. Like, yeah. I'll get it when I get it. And like, my iPhone 5 is still pretty freaking sweet. I don't really care. But when the next one is a little better.
When the first iPhone came out, it was
I did wait in line for that. Yes.
It was a major difference
to
what had come before. But this time it's like, camera's better.
Speaking, just a side issue.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you heard, because Robin just told me about this recently, about BlackBerry, the company. Like, they're going to be like,
they're in dire straits.
Yeah, they're getting rid of like 4,500 jobs. Yes. And yeah, like
$987 billion projected operating loss.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about before the iPhone came out.
Did you say
like,
900 billion?
$900 million.
Close to $1 billion.
Yeah, there you go.
Like the BlackBerry.
Billion with an X.
I remember it was like definitely a predominant, if not the predominant, like mobile phone force. And then the iPhone came out, and in a few years, like BlackBerry who?
It took 5 years.
Still, 5 years to completely ruin a company that used
to
be the dominant
force. That's
what I'm
saying. That's
force.
Like no time at all.
Right.
That's what. That's why people, when people are talking about like, oh, Apple never, like, Apple's great. They're, you know, they're never going to, you know, nothing can ever happen. It's like, no, 5 years is enough to take something from, I mean, BlackBerries were status symbols. You would, you know, the Kardashians had their BlackBerries on their front court seats at the Laker game.
Everybody loved the keyboard on it. It had the BlackBerry messaging, which everybody said was the best thing ever. I'm like, I don't know. I never used one, so I never cared about them. But I don't know. That's, BlackBerry.
Yeah. I mean, they ran with co-CEOs for a while. They literally, the company had two CEOs.
Yeah.
Very weird thing. But yeah, they just didn't find a way to adapt when the iPhone happened.
They kept this stubborn and inaccurate opinion, basically, that they were going to maintain the hardware keyboard as superior method of input for email and texting, mm-hmm. at least.
Mm-hmm.
And they would maintain their core audience of people who wanted a good hardware keyboard.
Yeah.
And that attitude was just wrong. Like, the general public said, you know what? Software keyboards are good enough.
Yeah.
You guys are wrong. your products are obsolete. Yep. You know, there's like two Android phones with keyboards still, and they don't sell at all.
Yeah.
You know, even when it's an option on the better OS, people don't want it. People are okay with software keyboards.
Yeah.
They just, software just needed to improve a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You get your predictive and your spell correct good
enough.
At some point,
maybe they surpass with all their predictive you know, craziness.
Yeah.
Right? It's more software than hardware.
Yeah.
That happened.
Anything else happened?
I had just a weird thought. That Vita TV thing, which apparently is not coming out in the U.S.
Oh, well, it hasn't been announced yet. I mean, it was originally just announced to be released in Japan before the PlayStation 4.
Right.
You know, the PS4 doesn't have enough Japanese games for them to feel comfortable launching it this fourth quarter, apparently. Oh. They're going to launch it in February.
Speaking of that, apparently the reason behind that is that the Xbox has zero traction in Japan. Therefore, the Xbox's launch date is essentially a non-issue, so the PlayStation doesn't need to match its launch date. Therefore, it's coming out much later, which is ostensibly when they would actually want to launch it worldwide. And that I thought that was interesting. Remember, we were wondering, like, it's
why
so
it's
weird
coming out
that
in February or something.
It's coming out after it does in the U.S. in Japan.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I wasn't baffled by that.
I was confused.
I wonder why it doesn't have any traction in Japan though.
The Xbox?
Yeah,
it just never. It never sold.
So it's all Sony all the time.
Well, the 360 never took off there. The you know, the next generation obviously could theoretically be a different issue.
Mm-hmm.
Except it sure doesn't seem like it, because the Xbox One totally seems like an American console.
Yeah.
You know,
we've all seen the picture.
The
meme
this week that I loved is this, you know, this fake Xbox advertisement with like American flags sticking out of it and giant NFL, ESPN, etc. logos on it.
Explosions.
Like Miller Lite or whatever. Yeah. And
buy Americans.
And doesn't
for
it
Americans.
Say like the only console that matters or something like that?
Yeah, big guns. Like just a couple of handguns behind it. You know?
Yeah.
Made me want to buy one.
It's like,
fuck yeah.
America, fuck yeah, the console.
Xbox One, you know? Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Vita TV thing. Why didn't they just build that functionality into the Vita? The Vita itself.
Have video out?
Just have video out and allow it to talk to a 3D, or I mean the
PlayStation?
Controller.
Because they were doing the like the Nintendo controller thing, where they were like, you really need touch input on the front and back to make a game on our device.
So let it do that. But then let it also be, because they have the new cheaper Vita coming out that's $200, right? So that's $100 more than the thing. But why not just let you talk, have it, let it be able to talk to a DualShock and have video out. And then it's everything that the Vita TV is, and you can take it somewhere and play games on it. Like, it seems weird that they're doing a separate box that does this. I don't know.
I
don't know. That just occurred to me.
I don't know.
I feel it's a reversal. I feel when they launched the Vita, they didn't do that with the video out because as a conscious choice, because they wanted to, like, you know, force games to use their touch input.
Mm-hmm.
And a year later, they're like, you know what? We were wrong. Like, all these games that have come out on the Vita and been successful, or a handful of them, you know, like a reasonable percentage of them don't use the touch input at all or don't need to and can be played on a TV. You know what? We need to go after this other market segment and where we could be successful pretty easily. Let's no longer like push that shit.
Mm-hmm.
The same with the Kinect and the Eye.
Yeah.
Like on that end, on that front end, on the PS3, they've never like pushed the Eye so hard like Microsoft. And now their whole strategy is not pushing the Eye with the PS4 like Microsoft is pushing the Kinect.
Right.
They're like, you know what? This is just an option that our developers have. We don't need to force all our developers to use this thing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to force consumers to buy this thing. So with the Vita, they kind of had the same shift in perspective. We don't need to force everybody to use touch. We'll just give them the option.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a lot like what went on with Nintendo and the 3DS to the 2DS. They're like, you know what? We don't really need to like have 3D be like this major force. No, we need to make a separate option that doesn't even do 3D because it's not as big of a thing. It's almost like they all kind of went with, like, let's try this awesome new gimmicky stuff because the Wii came out and, like, changed the game, and now they're all kind of backpedaling back. No, we just need strong games with the same kind of control. We don't need all this extra junk.
Not 100% of games benefit from a motion control,
right?
But some do, so let's give the motion control option, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. You play any games?
So I have one game to talk about.
Cool.
That was actually an old game that I railed on that I didn't actually play, that I have finally played. Mm-hmm. And I have to bring it up because it's kind of hilarious.
Your opinion changed.
It didn't change, it morphed. It morphed in a weird way. So
it didn't change. What was your original opinion? Yeah.
So
Wait, what game are we talking about?
So this game, Chess. I don't know if you've heard
I thought you were serious for a second.
No. Okay. So Squeenix, however you say it. So in one of their many Final Fantasy properties, came out with that game for iOS, Final Fantasy All the Bravest.
Oh, I knew it! You're a fan of All the Bravest!
So it came out for free.
I was a staunch defender of this shit that I never played.
And I was a staunch, like, by saying aggressor.
Theoretically, it could be fun, guys, so hold on. Like, we don't need to rip them for this.
So hold on. So it came out for free.
I know you're a huge fan.
It came out for free now.
Originally, it was $3.99 plus
bucks.
Tons of in-game purchases.
Yeah.
Now, just a quick brief reminder of what this game is. So this game is, all it is a bunch of battles, and there is an overhead map where you actually go from spot to spot, and it's kind of, there's like, you go to one spot, and there's like three normal enemy battles.
Oh, you are so
fucking
angry.
Are they FF-style random
them?
Encounter battles? Or
they're not random encounters, no. So they're not random, you totally say start fighting.
Yeah, but what is it? What is the battle style?
I'm getting there. Okay. So
you're a huge fan.
When you fight an enemy.
Fuck those guys. Oh, I love it.
When you fight an enemy, it's old school Final Fantasy 1 like kind of looking battle, except there's no menu like fight magic, spell, whatever. All you do, actually at first I thought you had to tap on each individual character. You start out with like 10 guys, and as you play, you get experience and it unlocks more party slots. So I'm up to like 20 now or something.
You have 20 characters on screen?
20 characters on screen.
Okay.
And then, so you like fight random battles or battles against normal enemies, then you fight a boss and then normal.
But what
boss.
Are you doing?
So when you tap on a guy, or when I realized the real way you're supposed to do that is you literally just put your finger on the screen over your dudes and you rub back and forth as fast as you possibly can, and they fight, and when they after they do their attack, they come back and a little ATB thing fills up, and then as soon as that is go again and you rub across them, they attack. And as you're doing that, the enemies are picking you off. Every time they hit you, they kill a guy, and as soon as they're all dead, the game kind of like goes into sleep mode, and every 3 minutes a dude is resurrected, or you can hit an hourglass item, which you have 9
what
of
the
that
fuck?
You then have to pay to get more, and they all come back. And every 3 hours, there's a fever button that lets you swipe with reckless abandon and no ATB. And you just keep going through an overworld fighting guys. That's the whole game.
Oh, I love it.
You can rub also pay, a screen.
You can also pay 99 cents to resurrect a popular character from a Final Fantasy game. It's random, though. You don't know. You just pay 99 cents
totally.
And they give you a random guy.
Blind
or
box.
you can pay $3.99 to unlock a new world. Right now, I'm in like FF1. Like overworld.
How much money have you given them?
I have given them $0.
Okay.
And I will give them no money because I have such a weird feeling about this game. This game is still absolute shit, and they should be rightfully burned at the stake for making a game like this because it's retarded.
But you're having
Sorry.
Fun. You like it.
But I can't stop fucking playing it. It's the weirdest thing. It is the worst game I can't not play.
Uh-huh. Oh, I knew it.
We should all be so glad that the game that you're describing isn't a slot machine, right? Because that's
part
exactly
of it is a slot machine.
No,
though.
But I'm saying, I mean, a literal slot machine. Like, you could definitely be somebody describing their addiction, their gambling addiction,
right
now.
Well,
right?
If I had given them money, yes, but I will give them no money.
I know, but we should all be happy that we have that pull toward
right,
shitty
right.
video games as opposed to slot
yeah,
machines.
I do not want to encourage this type of game
fall
in the
down
slightest.
That hole.
Which is why I waited until it was free because I had to know how bad it is. So
it
everybody
looks like it might be fun. My original statement was, "Geez, all the hate," and yet it
right.
might be a little
but,
bit fun.
But I hate that I love it. Like, uh-huh. I feel horrible playing it mm-hmm. because of the kind of game it is. Like, yeah. I realize what kind of Skinner box it is. Yes, mm-hmm. it's fun because Skinner boxes are fun. But you also realize while you're playing, much like when I played the Simpsons free-to-play game and when I played the Sims free-to-play game, it's a completely hollow experience in the end, and you feel worse for playing it, even though you're having fun while you're swiping your finger madly across the screen.
Yep.
It's a terrible thing, and they should be ashamed for making it, and I can't stop playing it.
Nice.
That's funny. Nice.
So that's
funny.
The real review.
I'm okay with
don't
playing.
Play it.
I'm okay with...
Actually, buy it for free, but don't give them any money.
I'm okay with having played Tiny Tower for a few months, you know? I built my tower like 80 stories high or something. Had a lot of dudes in that tower. That was mm-hmm. fine, you know?
Like, I feel I have a touch of the vapors while I'm playing it. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I am literally going through what someone who has... like madness is going through as I'm playing. I'm like, I'm watching myself do it and I'm like, what am I doing? What is happening right now?
I am just rubbing a screen.
Like Squinix has an invisible hand on my finger and they are moving it back and forth like,
what it is it's a raw good mechanic and it's like exploiting or, you know, taking advantage of these characters that you have love for. I mean, you have nostalgia and love for the characters. And then the mechanic of like swiping your finger over them and them going nuts. It's like the number orgy in Final Fantasy 13. Like, the game is just a number orgy. Like, there's so many numbers on the screen.
Yeah, it kind
of
is.
It's awesome. You just want to watch video YouTubes of that combat with all those numbers on the screen. It's like, what?
Also, you know, excuse me.
It's just like that distilled to this one mechanic. You just put your finger on the screen, you see all your dudes attack, and that's fucking awesome because you've never seen so many attacks at once.
Right.
You usually only see like one, and then you wait like 10 seconds.
So another crazy thing about it is that you get random items every once in a while mm-hmm. after you fight a number of battles, which are completely meaningless. You unlock new characters. You start with fighters. You get mages. You get... monks, you get thieves, you get all of the archetypes. They're all completely the same. They are no different. So there's literally no strategy. There's no differentiation. You get gil after every battle, which is completely meaningless and cannot be used to buy anything. So it is all of the nostalgic artifacts of Final Fantasy that you love and have loved since you were five mm-hmm. in the basest mechanic possible. And on one hand, I think they should be ashamed of themselves. And on the other hand, I'm amazed at the deviousness.
You're loving it.
That they could create such a box. It's kind of like I'm laughing as I'm playing it. I'm like, I can't believe they are literally getting me to do this.
It's,
what's wrong with me?
I don't think you should feel guilty. I think it's like...
No. I feel like Catholic guilt, and I'm not even religious.
I don't think you should feel guilty. I think it's like Fruit Ninja. Everybody thinks it's fun to swipe your finger on the screen and cut fruit in half. Like, there's no good reason... Like, there's not a lot of strategy that game. You just swipe the fruit in half. It feels good. I don't know.
There's more strategy in knowing where to swipe and not just, I don't even have to look at the game. I can literally do it with my thumb while I'm having a conversation with someone.
No, you do that in Fruit Ninja, you still have fun. You just blindly swipe your finger a lot and cut fruit in half, and it is super fun.
But it's better. It's much better, despite being similar.
No, I think it's almost identical.
I don't think so.
On the other hand, if you want to play a game that does those things but has more depth, I mean, Final Fantasy 14 is the game. It takes advantage of all that nostalgia and all those characters and all the sound effects, all the music, all the all the tropes, except puts it in a deep game that's really fun. Like,
I'm just curious if it were on Android, whether you would actually play it. Do you think you would?
No, I've never played. I mean, I tried Fruit Ninja for 10 seconds. I didn't like it. I tried literally probably 10 seconds. Like, I don't even think I played a full game of it.
You didn't like cutting fruit in half with a samurai sword?
No, I didn't.
See, not everybody likes
baffling.
That, dude.
And then
cats like that shit. What's wrong with you?
You're saying you're better than a cat, Jess?
Yes,
yeah.
I am better than a cat.
First, folks.
You have no inner cat? Do you not like playing catch?
I like a bunch of shitty games. I'm not saying I didn't, but
do you not
Fruit
like
Ninja
playing
wasn't.
Catch?
I like playing catch.
You know, Josh, it's really funny that you're railing on Chaz about not liking like this incredibly base mechanism, and yet you give me shit for playing solitaire.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Which is
yeah, that's my game that I
which is
find
better
no,
than
no value in
than
at all.
Swiping a yarn ball.
Yeah, I know. It's the same thing.
Okay. All right.
Tiny Tower, I played for like 3 minutes and literally was like, there's like nothing fun about this in the slightest. Like, I just didn't have any fun doing any of those things. I didn't understand what was cool about that.
You're better than me, Chase.
Do you like solitaire?
But not better than cats.
Yeah. I like free cell.
Because you like sorting numbers in order or something like that.
I like free cell. Yeah.
You like putting things in order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like cutting fruit in half. I mean,
Not saying that you're...
There's room for both of those people.
I'm not saying there isn't. I'm just saying, like, these are weird little base actions that some people prefer.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a good game to recommend. Actually, really good. It's called Dots, Android and iOS Puzzler. Sort of Match 3-ish. It's like Match Colors. It's just a really beautiful UI, really lovely kind of minimal game. It's just dots in I think it's like an 8x8 grid of various colors. And if a dot is next to another dot of the same color, you can draw a line between them. And you want to do that as much as possible and make long chains. If you manage to make any sort of square or rectangle and connect back around to the same line you're already making, then you will, when you let go, you will not only get points for the dots that you touched with your line, you will also eliminate all dots of that color in the grid, and then more fall from the top. That's it. So there's like a 60-second mode where you just high score over 60 seconds, and then there's a 30-move mode where there's no timer, but you only have 30 lines that you can make. Both really fun, really addictive, basic, simple mechanic, but yeah, it's a good one. Instantly became like my go-to, you know, quick
kill time
game.
Nice. It looks very well made.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
And it's free, I think. Yeah,
and it was
free.
99 cents when I checked.
Oh, really?
It might have been free that day or something.
It was free on Android.
Okay, well, I guess it's not free on iOS.
Huh.
You know, because Apple people have more money.
Right. Yeah, it's excellent. And then I also played Super Hot, and I think I made all of you guys
play.
Oh,
yes. Super Hot.
No, Super Hot looked like a fucking malware.
Super Hot
page. Like, I need to download and install some weird plugins and EXEs on this sketchy looking page.
It's Unity. You need Unity.
Yeah, it's just
what
Unity,
is this
dude.
Shit?
Haven't you ever played a Unity web game?
I just didn't click on that. It just looks sketchy.
Didn't do it?
It was on my work computer.
Oh, you gotta
do
it.
It looked sketchy as hell.
It's Unity. Okay, that's why you probably would never have even gotten that pop up if you'd done it on a home computer, because you are almost certainly already.
You should try
Unity.
It. It's pretty.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
Like, actually, maybe you should just wait until he makes like the full non-tech demo.
No,
version.
It's worth trying because that might be like a year away or something.
Oh,
like
really?
That.
Oh,
probably.
Okay. All right.
So this game is.
Can I say it?
The tagline thing.
It's Braid FPS.
Yeah, it's Braid with guns.
So put that in your pipe and think about it.
Time moves incredibly slowly unless you are physically moving your character around. And when you are, then time moves at a normal rate, but then you can stop moving and time slows way, 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 way down. So if there's a guy who comes out, there's a guy who's going to come around a corner, you can move, shoot in the place where you know he will be, and then if the bullet comes out of your gun incredibly slowly and the, you know, the muzzle flare happens incredibly slowly until you move, and it just plays with that mechanic, that kind of bullets are only flying and people are only moving when you are also moving, and how you kind of manage that. And I instantly had the urge. There's a really great level which is kind of down a long corridor, and three guys at the end who are shooting you, but the only gun that you have access to is right up next to them, so you have to make your way down the whole corridor kind of, you know, moving, seeing where the bullets are going to go, moving to a different, getting out of the way, but yeah, until you can get the gun to kill the dudes.
I think that's easily the best example of that mechanic.
But yeah. This game, I'm not really one for speedrunning, and I had this total urge to speedrun that game and really try to get a fast time and do it well. So I don't know. I like it a lot. I think there's a lot of, there's definitely a ton as a tech demo. I think it's really good. It's compelling. And there's a lot of opportunity for them to introduce other time mechanics as Braid does, right? Braid has situations where time only moves when you move your guy, but then they have like all the different ways that they manipulate time.
Yeah.
And you could do a lot of that cool stuff
in an FPS. Agreed.
Like, it's like, it's really cool in its initial inception, but it could be like 5 million times better.
Amazeballs, yeah.
Yeah, if he takes it further. He just needs to talk to John Blow and take his code and put it into this FPS or something.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
It's good. Maybe we'll force Josh to play it when we get off the podcast.
I'll try it. Yeah. You sent a link without much description, and then I clicked it, and then it just looked like a sketchy site.
Super Hot kind of sounds like it could be a virus.
What is this?
Actually.
What is this fucking malware?
It's a really weird, weird name for anything.
Yeah.
Let alone a game about what it is about, because it does not describe it in the least bit.
You know that,
especially that it just yells "super hot" at you when you start the game,
and when you finish each
super
level,
hot, super hot.
Yeah, like, it doesn't. I'm guessing an American didn't make it. It seems very European.
I have no idea.
Do you know that XKCD where it's just a pop up? It's like a browser pop up that says, "Do you want to download? You know, exe.rar.xvid.divx.mkv."
It's like every extension, yeah.
You know, .ini. Just
yeah.
That's what it felt like.
It just felt a little funny.
Yeah.
I figured I'd wait and see what you guys said.
Nice. Yeah. No, it's good.
Well, now you have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other games, Josh?
No, I played Final Fantasy. I could talk about more bosses. Talk about more dungeons.
You don't have to do that.
I'm good. Yeah. I'm good. I think I get it.
If you ever wanted to see like 1 or 2 hours of that shit, I would show you one of the last dungeons. It's just super epic and really just amazing music, like the final boss fights and stuff. Just like so fucking cool.
See, and
I love that shit. I gotta show it to you.
And I think it's interesting that you say that, because that's what I would think. I would think, yeah, like the end game craziness, that's what you'd want to show off to someone to get them into a game or get them excited about it. And yet, if I actually started playing the game, it would be a while
knowing that
before
that's
I
50
saw
levels away.
Anything close to that.
No, like I said, by level 20, there are 4 dungeons, 3 primal fight, or sorry, 1 primal fight, 4 dungeons, and like 6 guild hests, and like a bunch of group content that's really fun and cool. I can show you the level 20 primal fight. You'd like that.
Or show me, you know, what it's like if I actually bought the game and started playing, because that's probably as far as I would get.
Yeah,
is like the first 10 levels or something.
Sure.
Which would not be as exciting.
Well, just like anything, the first couple hours of tutorial are a little bit less exciting than a couple hours after that.
I think they need a way to skip that. I think they need, like, here's a level 20 character, like, go do fun stuff immediately.
The abilities.
There was. It was called the beta, the open beta that I tried to get you guys to play.
Well, they should keep that. Dang it.
Or it's called go try my account.
All right, well, we'll put that in the show notes, your account info,
your account
so people
info.
Can try that out.
Not your passwords.
Or use YouTube or something.
Yeah, there you
go. Music. Elvis Costello and the Roots released an album.
I thought his band was called something else.
No. Elvis Costello did a collabo album with the Roots.
Oh, as in the band The Roots.
Yes.
I get it.
Yes.
How's that?
It's good. It's good. It's
they
called
seem
Wise
disparate
Up.
Genres.
It's called, yeah, exactly. And it's one of those, it's like that kind of stuff can either be like, this is contrived and bullshit, or like, oh, these are two serious, you know, artistic musicians or whatever, whether it's music or not. Those collaborations are like either dumb or really pretty good, and they both got something out of it. And this is one of the latter, it feels like. There's only one single out. I haven't bought the whole album, but the single that's out is really good. The album's called Wise Up Ghost. So, yeah, I like it. Ylvis.
Ah.
Ylvis.
What sound does Ylvis make,
I don't
Chaz?
Know. Ylvis is responsible for the What Does the Fox Say thing, which blew up a few, like, earlier this week or something.
What does the fox say?
Ling, 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 ling.
See, there's something about that chorus that immediately just kind of, like, it doesn't make me not like it, but it just... Like I was trying to explain earlier, it just like immediately takes it out of like being a classic song that anybody would want to. I don't know. It's too silly to be taken seriously.
It is hyper classic. Like you're going to be saying that shit like E-I-E-I-O for 30 years, man.
I don't know.
I think it's,
I don't know
they
what
just
it,
wanted.
I think it makes a killer kids song. I don't think it makes a killer song.
No. It's exactly parodying that I mean, I think they did what you have to do if you're going to make a good parody song, which Weird Al does perfectly, and I think they do it like pretty much equally well, is
they get the music that they are parodying, the musical style that they are parodying, they do perfectly. Their imitation is, like, if the lyrics were different, that could totally be kind of a Eurodance, you know, whatever the equivalent of top 40 in Europe is. It could definitely be on the radio, like, if it were just different lyrics yeah, and some, you know, starlet singing it.
Right, and I think their song Stonehenge is far superior.
Stonehenge is so
for
fucking
doing
funny.
That, and that's way more Weird Al. Like, that the Norwegian, is that what they are?
I think they're from Norway.
That is a Norwegian Weird Al song, like, to a T, and I love it.
The funniest one is definitely Stonehenge. The others are also pretty good.
Someone like me, that was just trippy.
Weird. And
because of what it does. And I never watched the fourth one, Work It?
Work It is pretty good.
You didn't watch Work It?
No. Well, you didn't link it, so I didn't even think to look at it.
Yeah. Work It is kind of making fun of hip-hop. So it's pretty similar to that song El Corazon, which Hard
and
Firm
song? Oh, no.
Hard and Firm did a song called El Corazon, which is it's basically like them doing a Mexican, like, telenovelas intro ballad, those kind of love songs about the heart and the soul, except all the lyrics are in Spanish describing medical details about the heart. So it's like, the heart has approximately this volume and pumps this much blood per hour, but it sounds like they're doing this incredibly heartfelt, like, love ballad. Pretty good. So it's sort of along those lines.
Speaking of my wrong guess at who wrote that song, Beck has actually been putting out YouTube singles. His account has 3 videos, and they're all singles that I assume are from an upcoming album or something. They're all kind of different, but all really interesting.
They're great.
I mean, Beck is just, he's like one of those artists that just continues to sound fresh.
Yeah.
No matter what, like, he's like out of his time with the music he makes, and yet he's also kind of aping, you know, things that are happening at the time. He's like he's like the male Madonna in a way.
He's,
I don't know,
good at making sound.
God, so interesting.
Continues
I love all of them.
To stay relevant over long periods of time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because he never quite sounds the same every time. He always kind of changes a little. So anyway, I would go on YouTube, listen to Beck's singles. They're good.
Beck is good. We watched, or speaking of Penny Arcade, they did another of their epic D&D, like, live D&D games, their continuing adventures, which this time now has Patrick Rothfuss in the fourth chair instead of Will Wheaton.
Instead of writing novels, he's guest hosting on shit.
Yeah.
Damn you, Patrick.
That's worth a watch as well. Typically funny. If you've watched one, it's exactly like that, except now it has Patrick Rothfuss. I also watched Day 9's Let's Play of... he's kind of going through his pile of shame and like the games that he's never played. And one of them was Half-Life 2. So I watched the kind of the first half of his playthrough of Half-Life 2. That game holds up, man.
Shit, yeah.
That game is fucking good. And it is pretty amazing how good the graphics look. Especially though, I don't know if you remember, they have a bunch of shots where they have people's faces incredibly close to the camera.
Uh-huh.
Like the man in the suit.
Gordon Freeman?
No. The dark, thin man in the black suit.
What's the that name? Guy. Was he?
I don't. There's some name.
I know
for
the
him.
Guy you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they have some shots of him, like, right at the front of the camera, and his face looks rendered incredibly well, like, easily as good as a lot of the stuff that's coming out on consoles right now. I just forgot how good that engine was when it came out. You know, it's like 9 years old or something. So the original
Source engine. Yeah.
It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah,
they were good at doing a lot with fewer polygons.
Yeah,
you know, like Blizzard.
Yeah,
they make stuff pretty technically simple that just has lasting art.
Yeah,
value composition. Yeah. You know, good composition.
Good design holds up basically. Yeah. Unlike the Fox. Sorry, I'm strictly a Gangnam Style. On that,
I don't think it's the comparison to Gangnam Style.
No, I don't think
it's
the same, but it's
identical.
It feels like an ephemeral pop hit.
Like, I thought it was Psy when I saw that.
Oh, really? It seemed more Lonely Island to me.
It's
I don't know.
Way more,
or more Weird Al.
The vein of a Lonely Island or a Weird Al. Psy's actually making pop music that he wants to be taken seriously as pop music. He's not making comedy songs.
I'm just saying, when I saw the...
You think it's a comedy song because you don't speak Korean. You don't have the cultural context for what South Korea is.
Oh, burn!
No, I'm saying, like, when I say you, I mean we as Americans, right? Like, we don't know what Gangnam is and how it's basically Beverly Hills or Bel Air, right? So we just see, like, oh, this guy's making a joke song. He's not. He's writing pop music that is trying to say something about society in Korea, right? We just see it as this funny, goofy douchebag jumping around and screaming at an ass because
that's awesome.
We don't have the cultural context.
Although I've read
these guys, there's no cultural context. They're making a dumb bullshit song like Lonely Island are, right?
I read some of the lyrics translated from Korean to English, and it's not a very intelligent song. It's pretty simple, like it's very poppy. I don't think it's as deep as maybe you think it is.
I'm not saying it's deep. Okay. I'm not saying it's Wordsworth.
It's serious, but it's not deep.
But he is not, like, I don't think you'd go to Psy and say, compare yourself to American artist. He wouldn't say Weird Al, right? He's not writing parody songs. He's just say he's a pop artist. He's like, maybe it's close to LMFAO, right? Where, like, they want to be taken seriously as pop artists, but they kind of have a humorous edge to their music.
Yet they have that as a name.
They have a humorous edge to their music, right? There are bands that are like that. I don't know, like Weezer, they'll have a funny song occasionally. You know, they'll have some fun, or Bare Naked Ladies, right? But they're a pop music act, but they're kind of funny guys who have some kind of funny songs occasionally. Yeah.
Okay. I'll buy that.
Awesome. Purchase it. $1 billion.
Ling-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding.
I got nothing else. Nothing else happened.
I'm done.
All right. Podcast
over. Buy things on Amazon.
Website, social media.